Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 104 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make theater happen. You can find all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other fine podcast streaming services. If you have a spare 30 seconds, please rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you use to help us be more discoverable to listeners who haven't heard about us yet. And now for this week's podcast. For the last few years, the brilliant improvised musical troupe Showstoppers have been entertaining thousands of theatergoers with hundreds of musicals across the country and beyond. In 2016, they won an Olivier Award for their efforts, and that is no small feat at all. And it's just been announced that in addition to their monthly shows and Kids Christmas show that they have been putting on at the Lyric Theater in the West End and Leicester Square, they are going to have a limited residency run at the Other Palace in Victoria, where they will be celebrating creating their 1,000th musical during that run. Not even Andrew Lloyd Webber comes close to that number. Anyway, way back when Curtain Call was in its infancy, we got to see Showstoppers when they were in the West End at the Apollo Theater, and I was just floored by their improvisational skills. They're absolute genius at making a musical out of a few suggestions from the audience, including some Twitter suggestions. And I mean, we were in stitches in the auditorium, and even the ushers were weeping with laughter. It really was something to behold. So, you know, to celebrate their announcement, I thought I would. It would be the perfect opportunity, actually, to bring you a little chat with the co-founders of Showstoppers, Dylan Emery and Adam Megiddo, as well as the musical director, Duncan Walsh Atkins, I mean, whose job is to keep up with the lightning-fast improv taking place on stage and to somehow come up with any number of musical styles from across the ages at the drop of a hat. Now, just a heads up, Dylan does a brilliant job at ignoring the vocal warm-up that's going on stage while he chats to me in the wings before we head into the rather more calming atmosphere of Adam's dressing room. Have a listen.
Okay, so I'm Dylan Emery, D-Y-L-A-N-E-M-E-R-Y.
Okay.
I am one of the co-founders of Showstopper.
Okay.
I'm a co-director as well, along with Adam Megiddo. And in the show, I usually am in the chair. So we have the structure of the show is that we have someone who pretends to be the writer of musicals.
Okay.
And so that's the role I play. And so I kind of am a kind of on-stage director.
Okay. And you can start the show at certain times and then give direction, like you're saying, to direct.
Yeah.
Any kind of point you can snap and take a 90 degree turn or you know move it forward or whatever you want. That's
exactly
right.
So what happens is, but yeah, the conceit of the show is that I'm trying to write a musical and the audiences are my friends and they're trying to help me hopefully or slightly hinder me depending on how naughty they're feeling, and then the stage is a my imagination.
Okay.
So there is a total fourth wall on the stage. Okay. So the actors don't know that the audience is there because they're actually in a musical, but it's the one in my head.
Okay.
And then if I stand up at any point, then they all freeze. And when they freeze, I can tell them to do anything, and then they will immediately do it.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting dynamic, which you don't get, as far as more in any other theatre show, of the audience being in kind of in cahoots with me, helping me, but also sometimes the actors, the cast will then be naughty. They'll do things that weren't quite what I wanted, kind of on purpose, and then the audience is in cahoots with them.
Yeah.
So it's like almost like a game show host mixed with a schoolmaster is my role. So, yeah, okay. Unusual.
Perfect. And so we're kind of standing in the wings here. And can you take me through, like, they're quite simple props. So, but when we came last Thursday, things came on more than once, multiple times, and were a completely different thing. So, which I didn't second guess. I kind of went along with whatever they were doing.
Yes.
So what have you got that kind of that? What have you got that basically doubles for triples and quadruples for?
Yeah. So what we did was we've been doing this for 8 years, so we've had a long time to try to whittle things down and make them dual use.
Okay.
And also we kind of know the more common settings, the more common type of settings. So for in terms of costumes, hats are very important. What we do is for every hat, costume and for every prop, and we have always tried to think of how many different places could they be used. So a trilby is great because it can be used, you could be a Nazi, you could be a gangster, you could be a kind of sophisticated 1940s British gent, and all of those would more or less fit. You know, cowboy hats kind of only really, you know, it can cover a few hundred years, but it's only American things. So you know, so what we do is we choose, and we've got things like cloche hats and stuff, which again can be 1920s or it could be 18th century in certain circumstances. So lots of everything is kind of reversible and changeable, so that it can be used across lots of sort of time, lots of different bits of time, but also hierarchies as well. So yeah, so that's been the interesting thing. Like coats are really important as well, because if you've got we've got some amazing we've got some neat coats, like here's a great one. Okay, so you've got a coat here and it's got just a bit of trim.
Okay,
so this could be an engine driver, could be a kind of coachman, or it could be a, you know, a Cinderella coachman in the fantasy, or it could be a 19th century military policeman, you know. So anything, so lots of the stuff is like the trim gives an idea of the hierarchy and the status of the person. So there's lots of those sorts of thoughts go into the whole process.
That's great. And you guys, you were in Edinburgh this year.
Yes.
You're now here at the Apollo. Does it change the way that you approach the show, you guys? I mean, technically as an actor, you know, we do approach different sizes of theatre differently. I mean, how about when you're creating a show from scratch, as it were, from suggestions from an audience? Does it change the way that you guys approach as a company, as a team?
It changes a little bit in the sense of slight. Well, the Apollo is actually such a great space because everyone's so close.
Yeah.
So in fact, it still feels very intimate and we don't have to do too much. We don't have to make things massive.
Yeah.
But the big difference actually is more in how does the audience approach us. So even in terms of the actual set, we have these movable trucks which can be moved into lots of kind of Art Deco style kind of installations and again make the thing look radically different very quickly. In terms of the lighting, it's not hugely different from what we would have in Edinburgh, except it's better because we've designed it from scratch. So the only big difference is sound is massively different. And Tom Lishman is our sound engineer who came in and did an amazing job. In terms of approaching the audience, the audiences came with different expectations.
Right.
Total number of people who see us in Edinburgh every year is like 6,500. We sell out, but it's a 300-seater.
Yeah.
Here, like, the total capacity for the run was like 50,000. So we ran out of fans after like 2.5 weeks. So most of the people who've seen us have never seen us before.
Right.
And a lot of them have never seen improv before.
Right.
So actually what really changed was, first of all, they couldn't quite believe quite how much the show belonged to the audience.
Yeah.
There's a sort of, so we had to take a little bit more time to introduce them to this concept that actually, no, this is really your show. Shout stuff out, and that is what we will turn into a musical. And the idea that if you shout out something unhelpful, it's not like a comedy show where that's funny and then it's somehow okay. No, that is what you will be watching.
Yeah.
You know, if you shout out the Cheesemongers and Scunthorpe, that's where
that's
it's
what you're going to get. Yeah, well done.
So it was a kind of the retraining was interesting. And the other thing which was interesting about West End audiences specifically, in Edinburgh we get loads of students and loads of drama students and musical theatre fans, so they will do all the things they've been doing. So we get lots of Spring Awakening, we get lots of Rent, you know, we get lots of, and lots of Sondheim always. Here we get what's all on elsewhere in the West End and also what's elsewhere in Broadway, because they're the people who are coming to this show. So we suddenly get a lot more Mormon and Lion King and Les Mis and Phantom, but we also get like the stuff that's kind of a bit more, a lot more American titles. We've got The Wild Party has come up several times, so it's a lot more, you can see where they've come from and the kinds of things they expect.
And so you've got, like, you know, Hamilton, you know, just went, you know, so the night before we came, it was Hamilton was in there. Now some audiences here aren't going to know what Hamilton is. Do you have to kind of slightly inform them, or
So what basically how it works is our total list of like musicals that we kind of keep a track of that we think we really ought to know well enough to be able to improvise in the style of without guessing to, is about 250. Okay, so it's pretty substantial. For each of those, there's a kind of I've more or less got a sort of one sentence shorthand to describe it to people who might not know what it is.
Okay.
Now, if it's Phantom or whatever Les Mis, you don't bother. But if it is, you know, In the Heights or it, you know, or Hamilton, or if it's, you know, anything which is not quite as You're in Town,
yeah,
you know, it was very successful, but it wasn't seen by everyone. So at that point, I have to describe it. Now the question is this: do I describe the subject matter?
Yeah.
Because that's not really what's going to appear.
Yeah.
Or do I have to somehow describe the music? And what's interesting is that really separates the sheep from the goats. If you can, if you describe a musical and you can't describe how the music is distinct,
yeah,
what does that say about the musical?
Yeah.
So instead, we have to rely on references to the show.
Right.
But luckily, for lots of the musicals, the music is distinct. I mean, Urinetown is a brilliant example.
Yeah, got
this weird Brechtian kind of vibe.
Of course.
You know, In the Heights, of course, is fabulous. And then, of course, Hamilton with its kind of Baroque elements and then hip-hop. So all those stuff we absolutely adore.
Excellent.
There's another interesting thing.
Yeah.
So why is this show different from any other show in the West?
Yeah.
So one is that the lighting is obviously improvised, sound is improvised.
Yeah, in your cast list you have sound improviser, lighting improviser.
Absolutely.
Not
standing there because they're not sitting there waiting for the cue. And so actually the skill set is actually just as vital. There are three directors in this show, and the directors are me, most obviously.
Yeah.
There is Duncan Walsh Atkins because he's the musical director. Yeah. If he makes a single note, then the cast immediately responds because they know that's an emotional beat.
Right.
You know, if he pulls out, they have to change. Like, he's a total director of the show.
Right.
And in some senses, much more than I am. And then the lighting person, because if the lighting person changes state, that means you have to change the scene. They can, of course, end scenes, but also they just change the lighting state. They put a spotlight on, you fill the spotlight.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the way you approach all of this is, if this were a brilliantly written musical, what would it look like?
Yeah.
This is not an impro show with songs.
Yeah.
This is actually trying to improvise what a great musical would be had it been rehearsed and directed and choreographed.
Yes.
So everything that is done, either from the actor or from any of the other improvisers, like music and lights and so on, has to immediately be yes-handed.
Yes, Adam Megiddo.
And what are you doing on the show?
I'm with Dylan. I'm the co-creator of the show, and I'm in the show as one who jumps and sings and dances about.
Excellent. And how long have you been doing this?
Since the start, which was 2007.
Well,
Dylan and me and Dylan and Ken Campbell,
right,
who's sadly no longer with us, did a one-week workshop at the Actors Centre in 2007 entitled Can You Make Up a Musical on the Spot? Something like that. And we spent a week with a group of people and we tried it out. And then at the end, we got our people together and formed Showstopper in 2008.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's cool, because, I mean, I like the title, because it, like Ronson, you know?
yeah, we are just like Ronson. We are like most DIY products, actually.
And I hear on the grapevine that you guys don't talk to each other backstage.
We don't really, because firstly we're mic'd, and our mics are live all the time in case we want to sing from off stage. So there's no way, because it's improvised, of course, there's no way of the sound desk knowing who wants to sing or talk when. So our mics are live all the time, which means that if we talk to each other, we can be heard on stage. So we generally don't. We have a whiteboard. If something is urgent that needs to be communicated, we can write it on a whiteboard, but we tend not to, really.
Yeah.
And also, if you're trying to talk to each other, you're missing what's going on stage. So you're missing the action, and therefore you've missed a bit.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's completely unique. I've not come across that before in a show at all.
Yeah, it's the idea of sort of in a silent, enforced silence backstage. We can look at each other. Usually what happens is we do the same kind of communication backstage as we do on stage, which is we look at each other.
Yeah.
So if for example, a number's going on, I'm sure you'll see this several times tonight, if a musical number's going on, but it needs backers, people to go into the backing vocals and doing some dancing in the background, someone will grab a hat, so the other people will grab the identical hats, they'll just follow suit. And then we'll all go on looking the same. Occasionally, you might kind of point at something. But if we need to communicate, we'll just look at each other or just sort of point.
Yeah, okay. Do you ever point at, because you got the word twat up there.
A twit. Oh, I think it's, or has it been changed to twat?
It's been changed to twat.
Probably.
I just wanted to know why you guys are really harsh to each other if you kind of...
Yeah, you go on the twat list. You go on the twat list if you've really annoyed everybody. the twats is our naughty abbreviation for tweets. So when we get our Twitter suggestions at the interval, we write them up on the board, so that they're all there if we need to pick them up and refer to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. I spent a lot of time doing this in the wings, backstage, amongst the cast and the crew.
Yeah.
And generally, when
there's a pattern. There's always a pattern.
Exactly. There's always a pattern. But generally, when people are off stage, it's kind of their downtime. Whereas for you,
there's
need
no
to
downtime.
Be as clued into what's going on when you're off stage as when you're on stage.
Yeah, there isn't any downtime until the show's over.
And
because you could be needed at any moment, or you might need to contribute something at any moment.
Yes,
and is it
ladies and gentlemen, the house is now open. Please do not cross.
Is it a case of when somebody has the idea, like an improv, if they have it, there's that spark that goes, and they're on stage. You were very quick to move a truck the other day and be in the pharmacy. You know, the pharmacy. It was a seamless kind of.
Right.
From the rugby club into the pharmacy, it just, like, you know...
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully you just go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in many... There are certain things about the show that are really... there are certain things about the show that apply to all kinds of improvisation, but then there are other things that are just completely unique. And, in fact, certain improv rules might not help you in Showstopper. So, sometimes you would usually say yes to everything and just go, but sometimes that isn't the most useful thing to do. Sometimes you want to take an opposing point, or for story development, sometimes you want to kind of block, push, or nudge. Sometimes your instinct actually has to be checked.
Yeah.
Sometimes it has to be released. So it's a fluid thing. It's constantly changing, which is why you never have this off moment. You're constantly just there, present, waiting to see what you need to do.
It's something I've never witnessed. I mean, just being in a show, even kind of like we do Shakespeare Company times and things, watching the ushers all get together and watch you.
It's so lovely. That is one of the nicest things.
Yeah, that's another unique.
We did a workshop with them. Actually, I wasn't able to do it, but we did a workshop with them last week.
Brilliant.
Yeah, they've been great. They've been absolutely amazing.
Different show
every night. You get to see a different show every night. And then you get to see, I guess, our rhythms or patterns, or when we're not in rhythm and when we're not in pattern. And
are there any that stand out for you?
Particular shows?
Look back, yeah.
Actually, many, which is a really good sign.
Yeah.
Our press night called The Lying King, set in the offices of the Daily Mail, was a lot of fun.
Brilliant.
That was really good. Recent, we had one the other day called Strange Hill, which was set in a school for the sort of exceptionally gifted, the future leaders of the world. It was called Strange Hill, and it was more funny than I remember a show being in a long time. And we were making each other laugh on stage a lot, and it was just we couldn't get through bits of it because we were just having so much fun, probably too much fun. But I remember. What else have we had? We've had I think because we've done now nearly 700 shows. You start to remember shows that are in some way a breakthrough show, like a show with a setting that you've never done, or a show which has something about it that you've never experienced before.
Thumbs Up.
Thumbs Up was, that's the one I was going to say. It's Thumbs Up, which is, it was just a couple going hitchhiking across Europe. So it was a very different kind of story where they met different people and we were moved to different cities.
Oh, wow.
And it was great fun, and we were very aware of telling a story in a way that we hadn't told a story before.
Yeah.
So those are the ones you remember. So, yeah, Thumbs Up was a good one.
Duncan Walsh Atkins, I'm the musical director.
Excellent. You're just as much part of the improv team as the people on stage, as the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And just noticing in the warm-up that everyone's watching you.
Really, they're watching each other.
Yeah.
I say on stage they watch each other and I watch them.
Yeah. Is there a certain moment where there was a shift? I mean, it was the warm up, but there was a shift where you could see just towards the end of the song, they're like, is this where we're going to wrap it up? Because they're really in tune with each other. But
yes, it's really about being in tune with each other, and I follow them more than they follow me, to be honest.
Okay.
So they kind of lead one another, conduct one another on stage. So I try and give them a confident groove, a sort of clear style to sing in, but then they really take the song from there.
Yeah.
And it's up to them to lead one another. So you'll notice one of them will always step forward and lead that particular song.
Yeah.
Take it to an ending. And very much I yeah, I follow them and respect their choices.
Okay. The pressure on you to know all the different styles of musicals, I mean, because I'm sure people try and catch you out with obscure, you know, 1950s, you know, preview shows on Broadway. Have you ever been stumped?
All the time, but you can usually get a clue. So if I've never heard of a show, but if I know it was 1950s on Broadway, that's a big enough clue. I know what 1950s Broadway shows sound like. So usually if you have a good overview, a good general knowledge of musical theatre, you can normally play something, even if you've never heard of it. You say, if it's 1980s West End, I can make a fairly good guess as to what it would have sounded like.
Sure.
And I may be wrong, but at least I generally have something to go on. In the last resort, you can just say to the audience, to whoever suggested it, will you describe it? And we'll do what you describe.
Yeah.
And that's a fun game, although what we do turns out not to be much like what they've described. But there's usually something to go on.
And your two bandmates, is it always two, or is it sometimes more? Or?
No, sometimes less. It's never more than three.
Okay.
For smaller shows, we do touring shows sometimes to small venues.
Yeah.
Sometimes go abroad where we can't always afford to take the full band with us. So it's sometimes two, sometimes just piano.
Okay.
But three is my optimum number: percussion and melody instrument.
Yeah. So we had sax and clarinet.
Yes. So Chris, my assistant musical director, does sax and clarinet. So he's incredibly versatile. So with that combination, he can always find something to add.
What's everybody's favorite key? Never asked that question before. What's everyone's favorite key to play in?
My favorite key is C, because there's no black notes. But then reed players hate C. They want to play in E flat or B flat. So I do try and remember when I have a reed player there. Yeah. I do tend to favour the flat key. The problem is because I'm growing up in the 80s. I'm really into my key changes. So I'm always changing key. You know, it's like if I'm bored of this song, I'll just change the key. If I want to go around one more chorus, change the key.
Brilliant.
I'll start in a sax friendly key and then end up in the worst key possible. I'm sorry, you're right there, Chris. Okay. Oh, sorry, we're in F sharp again.
Great.
Dylan Emery, Adam Megiddo, and Duncan Walsh Atkins of the improv musical troupe Showstoppers. And I will give you all the info as to where you can buy tickets to their shows in a second. But before that, if you are a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. Create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and away you go. Please follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Curtain Call. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast, just get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me personally at john@curtaincallonline.com. Now, it just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Dylan Emery, Adam Megiddo, Duncan Walsh Atkins, and everyone over at Showstoppers. There is a huge team of creatives in the company. Far, far too many for me to list here, but you can read all about them at their website, theshowstoppers.org. It's a fantastic site where you can find cast and creatives info, video and photo galleries, ticket info for their Christmas kids show in Leicester Square that's happening later this month, and so much more. So get over there. And as I mentioned before, you can catch The Showstoppers, the improvised musical, at the Other Palace, where they will celebrate a massive landmark of 1,000 musical premieres. That is pretty crazy. So listen, do yourself a favor and get over to at least one of the shows. And I say at least because, once you see one, you're definitely going to want to see another. And I will put in the dates and everything for the show. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.